Chapter 13. Sure enough, when I got to the training building at 0630, the MPs didn't forbid me from going straight to the lavatory. I washed my hands, waiting for a moment when the other women were gone. Then I quickly stripped down, threw my clothes and underclothes in the clothing bay, and swung into the cleansing pod, a machine shaped roughly like a coffin, but with a hole on the small end. The cycle took less than 2 minutes, but I waited until the lavatory was empty again before climbing out and retrieving my now clean clothing. By 0650, I was seated with everyone else in our classroom. The others chatted animatedly about the mess hall's breakfast, which had included real bacon. I will let my wrath burn within me, I thought to comfort myself, until the day when it explodes and vengeance is mine. Until then, let it simmer. Simmer like juicy bacon on a hot skillet. Scud. Unfortunately, there was a larger problem. It was 0700, and one of the mock cockpits was still empty. Rig was late again. How in the stars had he been early to class every day for the last 10 years, yet managed to be late to flight school twice in a row? Cobb limped in, then stopped beside Rig's seat, frowning. A few moments later, Rig himself darkened the doorway. I checked the clock, anxious, then did a double take. Rig had his pack over his shoulder. Cobb didn't say a word. He just met Rig's eyes, then nodded. Rig turned to go. What? I said, jumping to my feet. What?
There's always one, Cobb said, the day after the first battle. Usually that comes later in the training than it did for you all. But it always happens.
Incredulous, I chased after Rig, scrambling out into the hallway. Rig? He kept walking. Rig, what are you doing? I ran after him. Giving up after one little battle? I know you got shaken up, but this is our dream.
No, Spensa, he said,
finally stopping in the otherwise empty hallway.
That's your dream.
I was only along for the ride.
Our dream. All that studying, all that practice. Flight school, Rig. Flight school.
You're repeating words like I can't hear you.
He smiled.
But I'm not the one who doesn't listen.
I gaped. He patted me on the shoulder.
I suppose I'm being unfair. I did always want to make it in. It's hard not to get wrapped up in the excitement when someone close to you dreams so big. I wanted to prove to myself that I could pass the test. And I did. But then I got up there, Spensa, and I felt what it was like. When those destructors hit me, I knew. I couldn't do that every day. I'm sorry, Spensa. I'm not a pilot.
Those words made no sense to me. Even the sound seemed strange leaving his mouth, as if he'd somehow switched to some foreign tongue.
I thought about it all night, he said, sounding sorrowful. But I know, Spensa. Deep down, I've always known I wasn't cut out for battle. I just wish I knew what I was supposed to do now. Passing the test was always the end goal for me, you know?
You're washing out, I said. Giving up. Running away. He winced, and suddenly I felt awful.
Not everyone has to be a pilot, Spensa, he said. Other jobs are important, too.
That's what they say. They don't mean it.
Maybe you're right. I don't know. I guess I need to think about it some more. Is there a job that involves only taking tests? I'm really good at that part, it turns out.
He gave me a brief hug, during which I kind of stood there in shock, then walked off. I watched for a long while, until Cobb came out to get me.
Dally any longer, cadet, he said, and I'll write you up as being late.
I can't believe you just let him go.
Part of my job is to spot which of you kids will best help out down here, instead of getting yourselves killed up there.
He shoved me lightly toward the room.
His won't be the only empty seat when this flight graduates. Go.
I walked back into the room and settled into my mock pit as the implication of those words sank in. Cobb almost seemed happy to send one of us away. How many students had he watched get shot down?
All right, Cobb said. Let's see what you remember from yesterday. Strap in, put on your helmets, and power on the holographic projectors. Get your flight into the air, flight leader, and prove to me it hasn't all bled out your ears into your pillows. Then maybe I can teach you how to really start flying.
And weapons? Bim asked, eager.
Scud, no, Cobb said. You'll just shoot each other down by accident. Fundamentals first. And if we get caught in the air again, fighting? Arturo asked.
I still had no idea how to say his call sign. Amphibious? Something like that?
Then, Cobb said, you'll have to hope that Quirk will shoot them down for you, boy. Enough lip. I gave you cadets an order.
I strapped in and engaged the device, but took one last look at Riggs' empty seat as the hologram went up around me. We spent the morning practicing how to turn in unison. Flying a starfighter wasn't like piloting some old airplane, like a few of the outer clans used. Our ships not only had acclivity rings to keep us in the air, no matter our speed or lack thereof, starfighters had powerful devices called atmospheric scoops, which left us much less at the whims of wind resistance. Our wings still had their uses, and the presence of atmosphere could be handy for many reasons. We could perform a standard bank, turning our ship to the side and swinging around like a bird. But we could also perform some starship-style maneuvers, like just rotating our ship the direction we wanted to go, then boosting that direction. I got to know the difference intimately as we performed both maneuvers over and over and over, until I was almost tired of flying. Bim kept asking about weapons. The blue-haired boy had an enthusiastic, genuine way about him, which I liked. But I didn't agree with his eagerness to shoot guns. If I was going to outfly Jerkface someday, I had to learn the fundamentals. Sloppy turns were exactly what had slowed me down in the skirmish yesterday. So if Cobb wanted me to turn, I'd turn. I'd turn until my fingers bled, until I rubbed the flesh from my hands and withered away to a skeleton. A skeleton who could turn really, really well. I followed the formation to the left, then jerked downward by reflex as Hurl turned too far on her axis and swooped too far in my direction. She smashed right into FM, whose invisible shield deflected the hit. But FM wasn't good enough to compensate for the shove, and she went spinning out of control the other direction. Both went down, smashing into the rock surface in a pair of twin explosions.
Scud,
FM said. She was a prim one, with her golden boot latches and her stylish haircut. Hurl, however, merely laughed. She did that a lot, enjoying herself perhaps too much.
Wow, she said. Now that was an explosion. How many points do I get for that performance, Cobb?
Points?
You think this is a game, cadet?
Life is a game, Hurl said.
Yes, well, you just lost all your points and died, Cobb said. If you fall into an uncontrolled spin like that, eject.
How do I do that again?
Ned asked.
Seriously, Ned? Arturo asked. We went over this yesterday. Look at the lever between your legs. See the big E on it? What do you think that stands for?
I figured it meant emergency.
And what do you do when there's an emergency? In a fighter, you...
Call you, Ned said, and say, hey, Arturo, where's the scudding eject lever?
Arturo sighed. I grinned, looking out my window toward the next ship in formation. I could barely see the girl inside. Morning tide, her tattoo visible even with her helmet on. She glanced away sharply, not even a smile. Fine.
Fly back in, Cobb said to us. It's nearly time for lunch.
Fly back in? Bim complained. Can't we just turn off the holograms and go grab some grub?
Sure. Turn it off, get something to eat, then keep walking on back to where you came from. Because I don't have time for cadets who refuse to practice their landings.
Sorry, sir.
Don't waste radio waves with apologies, cadet. Just follow orders.
All right, flight, Jerkface said. Standard spread, bank to heading 165.
We obeyed, maneuvering back into a line, and flew toward the virtual version of Alta. Cobb, I said, are we going to practice recovering our ship from an uncontrolled descent?
Not this again, he said. You'll very rarely be in such a situation. And so, if you are, I want you trained to yank that eject lever. I don't want you distracted by some bravado about saving your ship. What if we could have saved it, sir?
Jorgen said.
Shouldn't a good pilot do everything he or she can in order to protect their acclivity ring? They're rare enough that tradition states we should... Don't quote that stupid tradition to me,
Cobb snapped.
We need good pilots as much as we need acclivity rings. If you are in an uncontrolled descent, you eject. You understand me?
A few of the others gave verbal confirmation. I didn't. He hadn't contradicted the most important fact, that if a cadet ejected and scuttled their ship, they would never fly again. Maybe once I became a full pilot, I could think about ejecting, but for now, I was never pulling that lever. Having this taken away from me would be basically the same as dying anyway. We landed, and the holograms shut down. The others started to pile out of the room toward the mess hall for lunch, laughing together about how spectacular FM and Hurl had looked when they exploded. Kimmelin noticed me hanging back in the room and tried to stop, but Cobb gently steered her from the room after the others.
I explained the situation to them, he said, stopping in the doorway. The elevators say you didn't go down to Igneous last night.
I know of a little cave, about a half hour's hike outside of town. I figured it would save time to stay there. I've spent my life scavenging in the tunnels. I feel more comfortable there.
Suit yourself. Did you bring in a lunch today?
I shook my head.
Do so from now on. I won't have you distracted by hunger during training.
Then he left. Soon after, I heard voices in the distance, laughter echoing from the mess hall. I considered getting in more training, but wasn't certain I was allowed to use the machines without supervision. I couldn't sit there and listen for an hour, though, so I decided to take a walk. It was strange how exhausted I could feel from flying, yet still have so much nervous energy from sitting so long. I exited the training building, noting the two MPs stationed in the hallway. Were they really there just to keep me from snatching a role? That was a lot of resources for the Admiral to expend to satisfy her rivalry with an insignificant cadet. On the other hand, if you were going to pick a fight, you should fight to win. And I had to respect that. I left the DDF base and made my way to the orchard right outside the walls. Though there were workers here tending the trees, other people in uniforms walked among them, and benches had been set out along the path. It seemed I wasn't the only one who enjoyed the presence of real plant life. Not fungus or moss, but actual trees. I wasted a good 5 minutes feeling the bark and picking at the leaves, half convinced the whole thing would be made of some highly realistic plastic. I eventually stepped out and looked up at the debris field. As always, I could make out vast patterns, muted grays and lines in the sky, though it was too distant to see any specifics. A skylight was moving straight overhead, bright enough that I couldn't look directly at it without my eyes watering. I didn't spot any holes through the debris. That one moment with my father was the only time I'd ever seen into space itself. There were just too many layers of junk up there, orbiting in different patterns. What had the people been like, the ones who had built all of this? Some of the kids in my clan had whispered that detritus was actually old Earth, but my father had laughed at that notion. Apparently, the planet was far too small, and we had maps of Earth that it didn't match. But they had been human, or at least they'd used our language. Grand-grand's generation, the crew of the Defiant and its fleet, had known detritus was here. They'd come to the old abandoned planet intentionally. To hide, though the landing had been far more destructive than they'd intended. I tried to imagine what it had been like for them. To leave the skies, to leave your ships, being forced to break into clans and hide. Had it been as strange for them to look up and see a cavern ceiling as it still was for me to look up and see the sky? I continued to wander the orchard pathways. There was a certain rugged friendliness about the workers up here. They smiled at me as I walked past. Some gave me a quick, informal salute. I wondered how they'd react to hearing I was the daughter of Chaser, the infamous coward. As I rounded the orchard and headed back toward class, I passed a number of people in suits and skirts getting an official tour of the orchards. That was the kind of clothing you saw on overseers below. People rich in merits who had been moved to deep caverns, the safer, better protected locations that might survive a bomb. People like Jorgen and his cronies. They seemed too clean. As I walked away, I spotted something curious. Between the orchard and the base was a row of small vehicle hangars. The door to one of them was up, revealing Jerkface's hover car peeking out. I glanced in, noting the polished chrome and baby blue colorings. Cool, soft, and obviously expensive. Why stash it here, outside the base? Probably doesn't want the other cadets asking for a ride, I thought. I resisted the urge to do something nasty to it. Barely. I passed through the gate, then arrived at our training room before the others. I walked straight to my seat, already feeling like it had been too long since I'd been in a cockpit. I settled in, sighing, happy. I looked to the side and found someone watching me. I jumped practically to the ceiling. I hadn't noticed Morningtide by the wall as I'd entered. Her real name was Magma, or Magna, I couldn't remember. Judging by the tray on the counter beside the Vissian girl, she'd brought her food back here and had eaten it alone. Hey, I said. What did they have? Smells like gravy. Algae paste stew? Potato mash? Pork chops? Don't worry, I can take it. I'm a soldier. Give it to me straight. She just looked away, her face impassive. Your people are descended from Marines, right? I asked. On board the Defiant? I'm the descendant of people from the flagship myself, the engine crew. Maybe our great-grandparents knew each other. She didn't respond. I gritted my teeth, then climbed out of the seat. I stalked right over to her, forcing her to look me in the eyes. You have a problem with me? I demanded. She shrugged. Well, deal with it, I said. She shrugged again. I tapped her on the collarbone. Don't taunt me. I don't care how fearsome the Vissian reputation is. I'm not going anywhere except up. And I don't care if I have to step over your body to get there. I spun and walked back to my mockpit, settling down, feeling satisfied. I needed to show Jerkface a little of that. Spensa the warrior. Yeah. Felt good. The others eventually piled into the room, taking their positions. Kimmelin sidled over. Her long, curly dark hair shook as she looked one way, then the other, as if trying to see if she was being watched. She dropped a roll into my lap. Cobb told us you forgot to bring a lunch, she whispered. Then she stood up and walked the other way, speaking loudly. What a lovely view of the sky we have. As the saint always said, good thing it's light during the day. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to see how pretty daytime is. Cobb glanced at her, then rolled his eyes. Buckle in, he told the group. Time to learn something new. Weapons? Hurl asked, eager. Bim nodded as he climbed into his seat. No, Cobb said, turning. The other direction. He said it completely straight, and when I snickered, he glared at me. That wasn't a joke. I don't joke. Sure you don't. Before we get to turn on the holograms, Cobb continued, I'm supposed to ask how you feel about your instructions so far. What? Ned asked, squeezing his large frame into his cockpit. Our feelings? Yes, your feelings. What? I'm just surprised, Cobb, Ned said.
Asking questions and listening is a big part of effective teaching, Nedder, so shut up and let me get on with it. Yes, sir. Flight leader, your thoughts?
Cobb said.
Confident, sir. They're a ragtag bunch, but I think we can teach them. With your expertise and my good enough, Cobb said. Nedder? Right now, a little confused,
Ned said.
And I think I ate too many enchiladas. Hurl?
Bored, sir, she said. Can we just get back to the game?
Two-headed dragon, stupid name?
Amphisbina, sir, Arturo said. I honestly haven't been highly engaged by today's activities, but I expect that practicing fundamentals will prove useful.
Bored,
Cobb said, writing on his clipboard.
And thinks he's smarter than he is. Quirk?
Peachy.
Pilots are never peachy, girl. We're spirited.
Or, I added, briskly energized by the prospect of dealing death to the coming enemies.
Or that, Cobb said. If you're psychotic. Morning tide?
Good, the tattooed woman whispered.
Speak up, cadet.
Good.
And? I've got three lines here. Gotta write something.
I can't bother of much, she said, her voice heavily accented.
Good. Good enough, right?
Cobb looked up from his writing board and narrowed his eyes. Then he wrote something on the board. Morningtide blushed and lowered her gaze.
She doesn't speak English, I realized.
Scud.
I'm an idiot.
The old ships had represented various Earth cultures. Of course, there would be groups that, after three generations of hiding as isolated clans, didn't speak my language. I'd never thought about it before.
Bim,
Cobb asked next.
Boy, you have a call sign yet?
Still thinking? Bim said. I want to get it right. My response? When do we learn weapons again?
You can have my sidearm right now, Cobb said, if you promise to shoot yourself. I'll just write, eager to get himself killed. Stupid forms. FM?
Constantly amazed by the toxic aggression omnipresent in defiant culture, said the well-dressed girl.
That's a new one,
Cobb wrote.
Sure, the Admiral will love that. Spin?
Hungry, sir.
Also, I was stupid. Extremely stupid. I glanced again at Morningtide and thought back to how she'd always seemed standoffish. That had a new context now that I listened for the thick accent and the misspoken words. The way she'd looked aside when someone talked to her.
All right, that's done, finally,
Cobb said.
Buckle in and fire up the holograms.